Shalom Aleichem, thank you so much. Thank you for the opportunity of being here. And just following up with what Rabbi Dr. Ari Bergman said is that one of the things I've noticed which is so special about this opportunity is the Yom Iyun is that there are many people who have given, but it looks like all of them are also listening as well, which is remarkable. You have a room full of such outstanding, outstanding minds, and they've all been listening to each other. That is a remarkable thing. That's part of the achievement of this Yom Iyun. I want to say, first of all, Birshus Tamar Da'as, Rabbi Feigenbaum. Yedidi, unfortunately, we crossed paths in the air, I think. He texted me this morning. I missed the opportunity of seeing him here. I usually see him in New York. Birshus Rosh Kollel, Fried. It's really a pleasure to be back again, Rabbi Rakovsky, to be rejoined. We had the opportunity of spending those few years together in the five towns, and now Baruch Hashem to rejoin you in your space, and a special thank you to Rabbi Dr. Ari Bergman. I know he says he does nothing, but the truth is that he gave the passion and excitement to so many people around the world to be inspired about something that matters. And Rabbi Ari, it's a pleasure. You bring your passion to everything you do, and we are impassioned. We see things because of you. We appreciate things because of you as well. And really to the Kollel, really just... I have to say, putting together a program like this, look how beautiful this dinner is, folks. This is a regular Sunday dinner. Everybody else here is tailgating with their beers as they prepare for the eclipse. And here we are sitting in a Makom Torah with a beautiful meal, and we're talking ideas. Ashrenu Matzav Chalkeinu. Folks, we live at such a dark time. I was trying to think of a topic or an angle that has not yet been addressed. And I was just thinking about the events that have occurred to me in the last week, and I'd like to share them with you in a progression in terms of an idea. And that is that we feel sometimes so lost. We wish sometimes that we could have the opportunity to hear from some form of prophecy. You know, let us understand how Israel's pulling out its troops right now. What's going on? Was there even negotiation? What is going on in the world? We just heard about four boys who were killed yesterday. They just found out about a hostage who was killed, and now they exhumed his remains. It's last night I was in Young Israel of Woodmere hearing from Louis Har, who was just saved from Gaza. Remarkable, but it's difficult times. It's very hard times. And you sort of say, I wish I had a little bit of a prophecy to be able to understand what's going on here. And the truth is that if I were to look for prophecy, I was teaching on Friday with my high school girls in Shulamis, and I was asking them, what do you do when you want to find prophecy? And there ain't prophets. Right now, I'm not talking about the folks at Times Square with the big signs, right? they're not the key, right? So but like, we don't have prophecy. Where do we look for this? And one answer is we look for similar events. But I would say that perhaps the key in dark times is to look at the last time a prophet did speak to us. Like, if you want to understand what to do in the absence of prophecy, we're now in the era of Chochmah, as the Gemara tells us in Bava Basra. But it also makes sense that probably the last Navi was giving us some keys as to how to understand the prophecy post-prophetic era. Who's the last Navi, of course? Malachi / Ezra, depending on the Deus and the Gemara. And Malachi says a lot of very important things at the very end, very enigmatic things, but there's one aspect that relates to what we're doing tonight, and that is the following. He says the following. He talks about this day. Boyer katanu, it's going to be burning like an oven. They're going to be burnt up. The evildoers, they'll be recompensed. There will be accountability to the senselessness of hatred, mutilation, brutality. There will be recompense. There will be a time when they'll be burnt up. And at the same time, v'zarcha lachem yirei shemi shemesh staka umarpe beknofel. And HaKadosh Baruch will bring out the sun, and the sun will heal all those wounds, all those scars, all that suffering that we carry with us will be healed. And in fact, the Gemara says in Nedarim that you see a remarkable theological idea over here. What the Navi is telling us, the last prophecy in all of Tanakh before Nevuah ceases, is that there's no such thing as Gehinnom, says the Gemara in Nedarim. It says that in fact, in the future, it's not about post-Missa. That's a separate stage. That's Olam HaNeshamos, as Ramchal says. But in the very future, there's no such thing as the Gehinnom, says the Gemara, and I quote, it says, Rabbi Shimon Milakish says, Ein Gehinnom lo Olam Haba. There is no Gehinnom. Ela HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Moitzi Chama Min Artika. Hashem brings out the sun from whatever protective layer it is be covering it. Tzadikin misrapin ba, urushaim nidoinim ba. the same sun which is going to heal the righteous is going to burn and is going to punish, is going to judge those who lived illegitimate, cruel lifestyles. That's fascinating. Which means to say that learn from this Gemara is it's not two stages. You could have made the mistake of reading this psukim and saying there was the Yom Bo'er Ketanur is A, and then B is there's the Shemesh Marpeh. No, says the Gemara, that's in fact, it's a same mechanism. It happens at the same time. That's what the Gemara is telling us. And in fact, if you think about this, there are models that you see like this throughout all of Tanakh and Gemara as well. Just turning one example in Tanakh, one example in the Gemara, which perhaps reflect this model that Malachi is talking about. We learn in Parshas Vayishlach, Yaakov has a struggle with the angel. He is about to overcome. The morning comes. He is injured. And the pasuk tells us, it says Vayizrach lo yashemesh, kasher avar es penuel vutzoleh al yarechai. When Yaakovinu, the sun rises, Yaakovinu is limping, and out he comes. Rashi says, what do we need to know those two things? Those are two separate ideas. Why is the sun coming out and he's limping? Those are right. What do the two have to do with each other? Quotes our pasuk in Malachi, HaKadosh Baruch Hu heals him as the sun comes out. In fact, the Mefarshim say it came out early because it set early on when Yaakovinu was leaving in Vayetze Yaakov. Be it as it may. Fascinating. But now here an interesting thing. It's not an isolated incident. It's at the very end of that mortal combat that he has with the Sarah Shal Esav, with the agency of Esav, throughout the night of what is going to be essentially the model for all Golus. At the end of that, what happens is the Shemesh comes, yet the angel dissipates and Yaakovinu heals. In the same moment, that's what Rashi is telling us. This is the model for all of Jewish history, right? There's going to be this moment where that self-same sun comes out and there's healing, and his dissipation at the same moment. Again in the Gemara, this is a very famous Gemara, but I think that people perhaps quote this in different contexts. This is usually quoted around the times of Sukkot. Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Gimel, Amud Aleph. The Gemara is talking about the end of days, and it describes how HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to say, this is a showdown, he's going to explain how history worked, and there's going to be a lot of people who are going to petition to say, listen, we read out a part in the life of the Romans are going to come forward and say we built all the bridges, right? That whole business, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to disavow any of those self-interested attempts. And after they're all disapproved, then it says that the nations of the world are going to say, listen, Hashem, one more chance. One more chance. So Hashem says, you know, and the Gemara says, is that really fair? This is today is the day we have to work in this world, and then there's the world to come. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives them a mitzvah kala. What's the mitzvah, of course? Sukkah, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings out the Shemesh min Artikah. The Shemesh comes out, it's very hot, they leave, they kick, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yosheb HaShamayim Yitzchak, HaKadosh Baruch Hu laughs and says, look, you lost your opportunity. And the Gemara says, isn't that the case? Isn't Mitzar part of Minasukkah? A person who's feeling discomforted in the Sukkah should leave the Sukkah? And then the Gemara says, they don't have to kick, they don't have to leave with such contempt. But I was thinking in a certain sense, what are we talking about? We're talking about the end of days. Isn't that exactly the point? At the very end of the days, what is going to be the test? What is going to be the mechanism that differentiates between those who really keep the mitzvahs and those who love the mitzvahs but perhaps can't do them? Is the sun. Is that interesting? It's the same mechanism, both by Yaakovinu and by the case of the end of times in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. In fact, the next part of the Gemara in Avodah Zarah requotes the Gemara in Nadarim, which talks about this prophecy in Malachi. It's the next sugya of the Gemara. Fascinating. But here's my question to you. All very nice, beautiful pattern. But what's the mechanism? Why is it that there has to be one agency, in this case as defined as the sun? Why is it that the sun is that agency which is both the healing and the judging agency? Wouldn't it be all right if different departments, like HaKadosh Baruch Hu could say, okay, all the Rishonim line up over there by that door, and all the Tzaddikim over there by that door. Why does it have to be that there is the sun, and the sun does it all at one time? And if there is, what is that? How does that precisely work? I'd like to suggest two answers that I thought about in previous years, and then an answer which I was contemplating the last week. The first observation is the idea of light, clarity and light. You know, the Rambam describes that we live our lives walking around in darkness. The Rambam, in the introduction to the Moreh Nevuchim, says we walk around groping around in the dark, and sometimes it could even be one moment in our lives where there's lightning, and in that moment of lightning we see the landscape for a second. And we have a sense of things. I remember I was once climbing Table Mountain in South Africa. I was climbing the Friend. Didn't have a map. I done it many times in my childhood. Kind of figured out I had it by myself. We were doing from the other end. It wasn't such a great method to do, especially when what's called the tablecloth comes down. The tablecloth is the cloud which comes down on the mountain. And I remember we came up to this rock, and we were just climbing over. We were trying to get through the valleys to get to the cable cloth before it closed. Otherwise, we'd have to climb down the mountain. And there was like this deep moaning sound beyond this rock, and I couldn't even figure out what it was. I decided not to go there, and then for a moment the clouds broke, and I saw there was a precipice right below the rock. But you don't see that because it was cloudy, right? So there's going to be a moment in the night where there's going to be lightning, and you see the landscape, and for a second you know where you're going, you know what, and then it goes dark again. Says the Rambam, that's how most people live. They maybe have once. And then the other people that have maybe once a night, maybe once a month, maybe once a year even. And there's some people that's flickering all the time. It's like daylight. And I think what the Gemara is saying over here is that clarity. There's going to be a moment of clarity. How many of us are running away from clarity? I was speaking to families dealing with a teenager who's really addicted to screens, really addicted to being involved on all kinds of devices. And the question we're trying to figure out, what is it? And I was thinking that it's an issue of just needing stimulation. They want to have stimulation all the time. And I was talking about it with the Rebbe, and the Rebbe said, you know what? I've spoken to this boy, and I know that he just feels miserable about his life. He doesn't feel good. Doesn't feel good next to his siblings. Doesn't feel good in school. Doesn't feel particularly good about sports. And the reason why he goes there to the screen is because it's the only place that he feels good in life, where he can numb the feeling of discomfort he has in the rest of life. And how many of us are doing that? It can be screens. It doesn't have to be screens. It could be our work. It could be hobbies. It could be whatever it is. We're running away from clarity. We don't want clarity because clarity is too painful. At the end of the day, as HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, there's going to be all light, all the valleys, all the things you fail over, everything. And for some people, that'll be the most amazing things, the most amazing point in life. And for some, it'll be very, very painful because we're running away from that clarity all our lives. That's what I thought about first. But then there's another idea. The Malbim says, you know what? There's a difference because the sun provides two types of energy. It provides heat energy and light energy, says the Malbim. This is remarkable. In the 19th century, the Malbim already understands the difference between kinetic energy and electromagnetic energy, which is being developed at the same time. The Malbim says that maybe the sun is producing both heat and light. Heat is what hurts, and light is what heals. Isn't that fascinating? Now, it's a very complicated business, and you can think about this. Chazal used these types of terminology as well. Remember the mission in Pirkei Avos in the second parak, where it talks about Talmidei Chachamim, right? Right, the idea of light and heat. You have to be very careful because, you know, and you think about in our lighting, right? Why are we going more energy efficient these days? Because what we're doing, we're trying to have the first light bulbs. Edison, thank you so much. And all the people who copied him and took his patent he still deserved the royalties. But what was happening? That was all about a filament which was producing resistance. The resistance created heat and light energy. What are we doing today? We're diminishing the heat energy, right? So we can just have light energy. And the Malbim says, light energy is healing, heat energy is painful. And that's where we get our sunburns from, and that's what causes all the diseases and all the problems. That's what the Malbim says. Now, without getting into all the science of the complexity of the difference between heat energy and kinetic energy and the fact that it needs a medium and the fact that it dissipates over time and space, as opposed to, let's say, light energy, which doesn't need a medium. That's the complexity that created the medium called ether because they didn't understand how light could travel. It doesn't need a medium. It might be a wave, it might be a particle, depending on how you view it. Or the notion that it doesn't dissipate over time. It might bend, but it doesn't dissipate over time. Isn't it remarkable? And you think about the differences where punishment, din, comes where people look at things small-mindedly, like heat, small packets, like kinetic energy. Where perhaps the longer perspective of where we're talking about light energy might be, in fact, the model for seeing the longitudinal perspective enough. Nonetheless, a lot to unpack over here in this Malbim, trying to understand the same mechanism of heat and light as being the notion of the sun healing and hurting at the same time. But then, with all this put in its place, I'd like to suggest a third and last idea. And I know the time is short. But I would like to make a humble suggestion over here because there's two things that happened to me in the last week that made me rethink this. We had a very special friend and colleague, Rabbi Yonah Skler, when I was in Neri Yisrael. He started giving chaburas in Neri Yisrael on Thursday nights. I started going to his chabura now. He's a Rosh Beis Medrash in Baltimore, in Shomrei Munah. And he came to our shul last week and he spoke. And he spoke beautifully and he said a remarkable, remarkable, remarkable idea. And I'd like to share that idea because I think it answers this in a most profound manner. He made the observation that, you know, after October 7th, there was so much killing that was done in the name of God. It's a very uncomfortable thing. There were people calling Allahu Akbar, calling out in the name of God, and they were killing in the name of God. Very, very difficult. How does that reflect upon us? Like, meaning to say, human beings, who we also live a godly life, would we just do that if we had the opportunity? Would we just kill in the name of God? Is that the kind of God that we're believing in? And he made the observation that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has many names. And we don't understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu because the finite cannot understand the infinite, but we can understand the way he interacts with us, which is called midos. The way HaKadosh Baruch Hu interacts with this world. And there's a number of different midos. We talk about Yud Gimel midos. And there's different shemos to describe some of the different ways that Hashem interacts with the world. But the Shem Eikar, the essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the closest we can understand to what we call the predominant essence of how Hashem interacts with this world, the predominant one is called the Shem Havaya. Rav Ari was talking about just a few moments ago, the notion of Shem Havaya. And we know that the middah that's represented in the Shem Havaya is Midas HaRachmim. Midas HaRachmim is his expression in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's, in fact, as the Ramchal says, as Rav Ari was just talking about just a moment ago, is the notion that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created this world. Why? Or not? Perhaps not why. For what purpose? Leitev. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Tovu Meitev. And we say that, we're about to say that in the benching. Hashem is good. Hashem is loving. Hashem is kind. Hashem is merciful. Now, it happens to be there's other hats that he wears. What other hat is called Din. That's called Elohim. And when used, Bechol, because it's another notion, it's Elohim, and it refers to judges and power and other forms of power in this world. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Elohim, but that's a hat that he wears when he needs to deal with us in the world. Now, a parent. Does a parent become a parent in order to discipline their children? I would hope not. They become a parent because they love and they want to give, and they love their children so infinitely, but sometimes they also have to wear a hat called discipline, because to love, you need a discipline, right? But they don't parent because they need a discipline. They parent because they need to express their love through discipline sometimes, because boundaries are important to be able to love as well. Same with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And his argument was as follows. If you serve a God who demands of you cruelty, if you serve a God who is cruel, then you're not really serving Hashem, because you didn't understand Him. You never really understood who Hashem is. That's not the God that we're looking at. HaKadosh Baruch Hu be'etzim is tov u'meitiv. It's a misinterpretation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to think of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as such. And in fact, that's why, if you think about Avraham Avinu, finish the sentence. Avraham Avinu was the first what? First person to recognize Hashem. People knew about Hashem. He was the first one to recognize Him. We talked about a little bit about finding the Boreh just before. And I noticed he was talking about this just a little bit beforehand, right? Discovering HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But then let's finish the next sentence. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Avraham Avinu is the epitome of what midah? Chesed. So how do the two work together? How could it be that you have a person who's makiris bore, a person who discovers the Creator, and also is the paragon of kindness? Are those just happenstance that the two happen to come together? The observation is as follows. Is Avraham Avinu's realization and discovery of Hashem was not as the moral philosopher who lived in the academic tower producing incredible papers on all kinds of astrophysics. He recognized HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Creator, as the Creator who loved him into existence. And if you understand somebody who loves you is your Creator, then wouldn't you want to replicate that expression of your Creator? Wouldn't you want to be like that parent figure and express who they are, the one who you got to know as Chesed, as a Baal Chesed? Isn't that the expression of what they really are? Remarkable interpretation, remarkable idea. And that's why, what is the one Mizmor of Tehillim we know that Avraham Avinu composed? Pei Tes, the Eitan Ezrachi. What's the pasuk that it begins with? Pasuk Gimel. Once again, off the preamble is Olam Chesed Yiboneh. He recognized HaKadosh Baruch Hu as not the fantastic scientific creator of the world, but rather as the one who built a world of Chesed. And if he saw God, he saw his parent as a God of love, then he's going to be a person of love, because he's representing and reflecting what it means to understand. That's what it is. It wasn't just the argument by design. And why it struck me so this week, and I didn't ask permission, but it was a conversation I had on Sunday with somebody very special. We lost somebody very special in our community in the last few months, and he was a remarkable, remarkable person. He saved many, many, many lives, and he made many people's pain manageable, and he allowed people to live their lives in really with tremendous, tremendous meaning, and he's affected so many of the lives even in this room. And he passed away recently, and the family was talking about what to put on the tombstone. He didn't want any fancy things. And the pasuk the family suggested was, and this person was a psychiatrist, a person of tremendous, tremendous integrity and value and love. And I couldn't think of a better pasuk in the world to describe him, because that was exactly who he was. And then I was thinking, but that pasuk describes, that pasuk which is saying Tehillim Kuf Mem Zayin is describing Hashem. Is it all right to put a pasuk about a person, the deification of a person, on a tombstone? And so we changed in the conversation, we changed it ever so slightly to remove the hey idea, just to say roife lishvur elev mechabesh atzosam. And I want to tell you something, is that there could be no greater accolade for a human being, for a person who can love in the same way they recognize Hashem is a God of love, to share that same idea of refuah to other people, because that's who they understand that concept of life. of what it means to be. And to me, it was a tremendously moving moment. This week, had just a very, very special family, thinking about a very special person. And then that comes down to the last point, and we'll close with this. What's this got to do with the son? Can you tell that to me in English for a second? Forget the first part about where it is. And he's sitting in the entrance of his tent. Finish that sentence in English. In the heat of the day, right? And if that's the way I translated it, then I would have worded the pasuk differently. It should have read as follows. In the heat of the day. But it doesn't say that. It says, like the heat of the day. That doesn't work quite, right, does it? We just run through. You have to translate sometimes in English back to Hebrew to figure out what the problem is. Says the Klei Yakar, why was he like the heat of the day? Because Avram Avinu was replicating the sun. What does that mean? Avram Avinu looked to the heavens and saw this luminary body, the source of energy of all living creatures. It creates the energy, it creates the light energy, which turns from photosynthesis into glucose, which provides all the energy to the plant kingdom, which provides in turn all the energy to the fauna, to us. Every ounce of energy is derived from the sun before we started our own derivation of power. And he looked at this and he said, wow, Hashem loves us so much. He created a source of energy to feed us. It is so wonderful to be alive. Look how much he gives. You know what I'm going to do? I need to replicate what it means to be like the sun. I need to be a giver. And yes, I just had a minor operation just 3 days ago and I'm 99 years old and the doctor really said I should be inside. But I cannot help myself being like that. Is that remarkable? Says the Klei Yakar. Which means to say that's precisely the point. In the generation of Avram Avinu, most people looked at the luminary, at the sun. What did they say? It's a deity. It's a power. And you know how you deal with it? You negotiate with it. So I pay it off. I hide from it. I know whatever it is. However, I deal with the differentials of power because that's the currency of the sun. And Avram Avinu looked up and said, Hashem really loves us. Look at this. Look what he did for us. I want to be like that. I want to be Roy Felish for Elev. I want to be a person who's looking out for people. Kechom Ayom. That remarkable? And that divergence of looking at a natural phenomenon is what differentiated Abrahamic traditions from the pagan traditions around him. It's not differentials, it's not currency of power, but it's the currency of love. And I wonder, perhaps stepping out on a limb here, I wonder if that's precisely the point of the end of days. Is when the sun comes back, is the sun marpe? Is it an agency of love? Is it an agency of healing? Is it an agency of a God who loves us? Or is it an agency of power and punishment? And perhaps it depends on the way we conceived Hashem and his agencies in the first place. And if we think about the end of this, what the first thing Hashem is going to say to us when we get to the Olam HaEmes. You know, a lot of people are like, did you learn Torah? Were you a good person? That's all true. But perhaps the answer is, this Rashi said, I think is really truly appropriate, is I think the first thing Hashem is going to say to us is, I really love you. I really love you. And yes, and there's din, and there's din is a hat. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us. And if we realize Hashem loves us, and we look at the sun and realize that's an expression of that, then surely we'd want to be like that. And it changes my davening. Just this has happened in the last week, just as trying to absorb this idea. I daven differently now. Because when I look at Hashem, I don't look at HaKadosh Baruch Hu looking down on me sternly and trying to... Yes, there's lots of things that need to be fixed. Believe me. I can show you. It's a very big file that I have to work with. Okay? We all do, right? But that's... HaKadosh Baruch Hu really loves us. And if that's the kind of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's the kind of God we have, then I want to replicate that. I want to shower that energy forward as well. I want to be Kechom Ayim. Be'ezra Hashem, the eclipse is wonderful. But there's going to be a Tuesday after the eclipse too. And I'd like to make sure that in Mitzvah Hashem, every time we look up with our glasses, we're able to share that energy with other people because HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us. Thank you so much.